Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with James Scott. How are you, James?
I'm very well, Chris.
Excellent. Last week we were talking about some of the work Tim Hannay did, but this week I want to talk a wee bit about some of the supermarkets and some of the experimentation you've done in store. Does that sound all right?
That sounds great.
There you go. You work, Bibendum works with quite a few multiples. When I say multiples, I mean like supermarkets or outlets. They're almost self-selecting in terms of their clients in some respects. You know, you don't get people on the poverty line going to Waitrose. Similarly, you don't get normally super affluent people going to Lidl. Not to say that you don't get some crossover, but these groups are self-selecting in their own right. And similarly with postcodes as well, in terms of affluence and all that sort of stuff. Some of the stuff that Tim Hannay did was all about, I taste bitterness, I'm very sensitive to bitterness, so therefore I like a particular style of wine that might hide that bitterness. And that's not really self-selecting you in terms of, that's a genetic thing, and some rich people can have the same genes as some poor people in terms of what they like. So is your work based more on understanding what the postcodes and therefore what they like, or is it more looking at the biology?
The reality is I'm not a scientist, and I'm not a biologist in terms of getting under the skin of someone's biological makeup and their predisposition scientifically to a whole spectrum of flavours. What we are working towards, though, is region by region, understanding what the breakdown of people across demographic groups, across ages, across different areas of the country, are looking for from a product, so that we can go, okay, in Newcastle, for example, we can look at what people want to drink by country and what people want to drink by varietal. And then we can also actually, within that, talk about the relative sensitivities of the underlying population, because there might be more, in Tim's terms, more hypersensitive tasters in that area. So whilst we've not only established the proportion of people who are in that area and the amount of money, that the spectrum that they might earn, we can also say what their first choice countries are, what varietals they want to see, and then within that, what profiles the wine should take, because a Chardonnay can be very, very many different things. And as a result, we might recommend in areas where there were more tolerant tasters that the Chardonnay was bigger and fuller and had more potentially new oak or was barrel fermented. And in other areas of the country where somebody might want a Chardonnay but sort of a lighter profile one, we could advise to that end as well.
You were trialling this with All Bar One and Waitrose. Is it very much a case of going to each individual store and saying, this is things that you might want to consider? And things like Waitrose, they must have a pretty good database about knowing what sells where. How do you add value to that?
I think the important thing is, when anybody is selling anything, they are naturally, it's completely the right thing to do, and all savvy retailers in any environment look at their own sales mix. Mm. And you look at what's selling and what's hot and what's not. The important thing is to understand that your sales mix only tells you about your business in the context of the customers you're already serving. It doesn't tell you what the customers who aren't using you want. It's important to put your business in the context of the market as a whole, and that's what we're trying to achieve here. It's to sort of say, look, you have Waitrose do have a broad church of people that they reach to, and one of the things that they want to do is make sure that when people think of Waitrose wine, that they don't think of it as necessarily completely exclusive. They think of it as accessible, as having a broad range of wines that they can go into. Because all of these supermarkets, whilst they are, as you say, self-regulating to a certain extent of, you know, where they sit in terms of demography, they're all very much interested in catering for the broadest possible spectrum of customers. What we're trying to do with Taste Test is not to get into who has the best wine range or recommend X over Y. That's not what it's about at all, but give the consumer a platform for, you know, empowering the consumer to make their own decision in whichever retail environment they find themselves in.
So how do you do that? And how have you done your trials in Waitrose and All Bar One?
In Waitrose, we've had 6 stores with Waitrose, and they've been split in half. So 3 of them have been merchandised in one way and 3 of them in another. 3 have had all other signage stripped out, and they are just segmented by the taste test. So each wine is rated from 3 to 15 because there are three questions and you can get a score from 3 to 15. So we match people to the product.
What are the three questions?
The three questions are around the salt and bitterness and coffee questions that Tim's used for several years now. And the ones that we used during 2010 when we did our online survey and in subsequent surveys that we've done and in all of our tastings and tests at Ascot and in different restaurants and bars. So we've built up a large data bank of people who've answered those questions, and as a result we've been able to make sure that they're, you know, robust, the findings of this, and make sure that there's an appropriate number of wines on shelf for people to match themselves up to. So we've got three that are completely merchandised by the taste test, and then there are three that are still segmented by country, and then within country they are profiled from 3 to 15. So if somebody is very much interested in French wine, they can go straight to the French fixture, but then within that they can find wines that suit their flavour profile.
What sort of results have you had? Has it changed the purchasing behaviour? Is it, because ultimately, places like Waitrose, their bottom line is what they're really interested in. Has it improved our sales? Is it helping people to find the wines they want, or is it helping Waitrose make more money, or how does it work?
From Waitrose, I can't speak for Waitrose, but what they are naturally trying to do is give people the best possible experience every time they come into a Waitrose. The reality is they are a retailer, and naturally it's important for them to drive the appropriate market share for their shareholders, you know, their partners. But in terms of what we've seen from the results of the trial, it's still in trial, so it's not completely concluded. But we've seen great success, particularly in the smaller stores, and from the fully merchandised, taking country out and just giving people the taste test to navigate by, has been a really, really interesting sort of conversation point in those areas. The thing that we're excited about, that we've seen sort of some preliminary results that point to a success of this, is a greater amount of more esoteric product is being sold. So rather than somebody going into the aisle and thinking, crumbs, I need to buy some wine, oh, there's a Pinot Grigio, it's on a particular discount, let's grab that. They're able to go, okay, well, this Pinot Grigio is a 7, and, oh, look, there's some product I've never heard of that's also a 7, so it must be like this, and it's giving people a point of reference. And far from, you know, filtering people down into a more limited number of SKUs, it's actually freeing consumers up to actually experiment a bit more. One of the primary drivers for us is that we're using language that helps to democratize wine for the consumer at large. But equally, in a category that's getting increasingly expensive, we're trying to help the consumer feel like the trauma of trial is being reduced. So it's less likely that they're going to be pouring money away on something that they're not going to enjoy.
That is always the problem. And reading the back of the labels is almost, well, it's fictitious, half of the stuff on the back. So,
very cynical, Chris.
Yes. How does it differ, though? Some, like the back of the label, some people put the sweetness level on the wine. And a lot of Tim's stuff, seems to be focused around sweetness versus tannins. You know, if you're quite sensitive to bitterness, then a sweeter wine, particularly or a fruitier wine, might help mask the bitterness a bit. And if you like tannins or you like that sort of stuff, you want to embrace that sort of thing. Is it along those lines? And how, you know, like a lot of Australians started putting sweetness levels on the back, and for Rieslings they even start putting the sweetness level on Rieslings. So you can go from sweet to bone dry.
Well, I mean, that's not new in terms of rating wines by dryness and sweetness. That's been going on for decades. And many people are familiar with seeing those ratings on them. But one of the things that we've not found is that it's all very well rating a wine, but if somebody has no clue how that relates to them, they've still got to buy a number of products, try all of these products before they work out where they sit in the spectrum.
Exactly.
What we're trying to achieve is a parallel rating system. So you can kind of go, okay, this is, work out where you sit, and then engage with wines that sit there also. You can branch out and experiment should you wish, but what we'd say is this is your sweet spot. This is where you can enter the category and find wines that you're likely to enjoy. If you would like to branch out, if you're going to go up the spectrum, it's more likely that there'll be more tannin in them, but not just tannin, more alcohol, more oak. And as a consequence, if you are a sensitive taster, you're going to be less likely to enjoy these. That's not to say you won't enjoy them, but generally speaking, you're going to find it a bit stronger. You know, you're going to find it perhaps a little hotter, a lot more bitter, potentially. Mm. And so it's a recommendation. It's not a straitjacket for consumers. We still, you know, recommend that people experiment up and down the taste spectrum if that's what they want to do. One of the things we've seen in a bar environment are groups of people coming in and looking at the different categories and looking at the marks from 3 to 15 and understanding, okay, well, 15 is going to be something that's really going to pack a punch flavour-wise. And even though I'm a 7, come on, lads, let's try it. Yeah. And experimenting with wine.
It's that vindaloo, isn't it? Blokes with a curry. Yeah, let's go for that one.
Well, you know, it's funny you say, and it's very astute insight there into the particular demographic I'm talking about. It's not a group of ladies that are potentially doing this, but still, you're getting people going, I want to know what that tastes like, yeah. and trying to put them fit themselves into it and using it to explore.
I can see how it could work in a supermarket where, you know, people go to buy a bottle. What about in a restaurant or a bar, say, as you said, or bar one, where sometimes people buy by the glass? Has it helped people try different wines by the glass, or is it by the bottle? You know, is there a difference in bottle purchases versus glass purchases using the system?
Well, as I say, it's still on trial in all bar one, but I think it's important to note that this is something that we've done to try and help consumers find a product that they're going to enjoy taste-wise. It's not been sort of shoehorned into a range to try and drive any particular sales. What we're looking to do is engage with customers that previously haven't been engaged by wine. I read a report last year from Wine Intelligence that said 7.1 million people in the United Kingdom drink alcohol but do not drink wine. Now, we're doing something massively wrong as an industry if we are excluding 7.1 million people from our product. That's not to say that all of them will ever enjoy wine. They might hate it for completely tangential reasons. But equally, there'll be some amongst that number that we've actively put off. They might find the whole thing so confusing that when it comes to point of sale, they go, my word, I have no idea what the difference between a Chenin Blanc and a Sauvignon Blanc is, so I'm going to have a gin and tonic or a vodka and orange because life's too short. Whereas with this, what can happen is they may have come into a bar environment and they may have had their gin and tonic, but then they will see on their table a tent card throughout the evening and a bit of a quiz to do, and it will start a discussion and they'll go, wow, I'd never heard of Riesling or Grüner-Veltliner or Albarino. I can't even say it. But this sounds great. You know, the descriptor's good. It's in language I now understand. It's also, it says, according to this test, that it's more likely that I'm going to enjoy it. As a result, perhaps I'll have a glass of that. And I think the point of entry for people who've not been engaged with the category before is, in a bar environment, is almost always going to be a glass to start with.
What do you think the future of this sort of thing is?
Well, I really have no sort of boundaries to put on it. What we're really hopeful is that this will catch on in a very genuine way and be seen as what it is. It's a customer-focused solution that helps people understand why they like what they like and helps them to experiment around products that previously have been anathema to them. If this can be done across the wine trade, that would be fabulous, because it's not about trying to drive the individual profitability of Bibendum or trying to come up with another completely convoluted way of getting people to understand a product in one retail environment. It's about empowering the customer in all retail environments. Then it's up to us and up to the individual retailers, bars and restaurants to make sure that their point of difference is loud and clear to the consumer across their range, the quality of the range, the price tiering, etc., that gets people into their particular outlet. But when that person is there, there is a kite mark, there is an intel, there is a red tractor that gives them the assurance that they'll be able to navigate the range simply and that it's not all about price. Because for too long, across the industry, the only way a consumer has been able to engage with wine has been around price promotions. And it's absolutely savaged the category. And it's also led to, unfortunately, a large amount of irresponsible dabbling with wine within the consumer base. And what I think one of the vital things is to restore the linear relationship between price and quality that wine used to have. It used to be, my wife tells me that if you spend more money on tights, you get a better quality tight. If you spend more money on foundation makeup, you get a better quality product. And that used to be the case for wine. One of the things that's happened now is you can see half-price deals in the supermarket and you see something that's $11.99 reduced to $5.99 and you think you're getting a fabulous bargain. But the quality of the product really is not there for somebody who's parting with £12.
Yep.
They will be massively disappointed with that bottle of wine when they open it, and we will lose them. They will become one of that 7.1 million people. So,
or they'll say, what's the point?
Yes, they will. And so what I hope is that with this, we have a perfect system that can be taken up by everybody, hopefully. I mean, that's the dream. And then there is something that reassures the customer wherever they go.
Excellent. All right then, James, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Chris.